Wow, six innings of one hit, one run ball for Ian Anderson in his major league debut.
Welcome to the OFR Farm Report, your look at the Atlanta Braves minor league system, brought to you by OutfieldFlyRule.com, hosted by Andy Harris and Matt Kritzberg.
Hey everybody, I am Andy Harris, and with me is my co-host, Matt Kritzberg. Matt, there is only one question on the minds of Braves fans here at as we're recording this, 2.5 hours after the trade deadline. Who is the Prize Picks player of the week, Ian Anderson or Austin Riley?
That was a very interesting tweet that the Braves put out. I think it was about 5 minutes after the trade deadline. The poor social media person had to put that tweet out. It was in the comments below that tweet were, I would say, mostly negative. To put it kindly.
Mostly negative, very often vulgar, yes.
Some poor social media person is earning their paycheck this evening.
That poll probably got a little bit more attention than they usually do. So, ka-ching, there you go. Congratulations, yeah. Prize Picks.
Any social media attention is good social media attention.
Absolutely. All right. So the trade deadline came and went. It was a weird deadline, which is not surprising considering it is a weird season. A lot of the big clubs ended up not doing anything, and that includes essentially the Braves. They did make one minor trade. They picked up starting pitcher Tommy Malone from the Baltimore Orioles actually on Sunday. And he was actually able to make a start on the same day he was traded for, although considering the results, maybe we wish he hadn't. But the Braves ended up winning that game, so it all worked, right?
Sure. And I speculated at the time, right after the trade announcement was made, that he would probably make his first start in Boston on Wednesday after the Friedman-Anderson starts on Monday and Tuesday. I don't know why they... it just didn't seem like a great plan to rush him into his first start with only a few hours notice. And we've heard stories like this in the past where he met his battery mate on the field. I don't know if that happened, but it was probably pretty close to it. So it just didn't seem great. But like I said, the results beat the process in this case.
Yeah. So given the whole scenario here, it seems unlikely that a lot of teams were actually looking to pick up a lot of salary. Probably the Braves are one of those teams. There was only one starting pitcher that moved in this trade deadline that had control beyond this year, and that was former Cleveland Indian Mike Clevinger. And he went to the Padres for a big haul of prospects and young major leaguers. And looking at the package, I think it's a pretty good package that Cleveland got back from San Diego. That said, they're all things that San Diego probably doesn't need anymore. Because let's just put it out there. San Diego has the best and most loaded farm system in the majors right now. And I don't think they traded away anything they couldn't live without. But a lot of fans are looking at the package and going, couldn't the Braves have topped that? And I think, Matt, the answer is yes, they certainly could have topped it, but I don't know if it would have been wise for them to do so.
Yeah, I agree on that. I think the Indians did a good job of balancing present needs and future needs because they're going for the playoff berth themselves. And they got players like Josh Naylor, Austin Hedges, and Cal Quantrill who can contribute to the roster immediately, as well as taking on some mid-top 30 prospects like Gabriel Arias, Joey Cantillo, and Owen Miller who can contribute in the future. If they had wanted to, they may have been able to get just a strictly futures package. They might not have gotten as many players, but they probably could have gotten a little bit higher upside of player, but I can see what the Indians were trying to do here and trying to balance their needs for now and the needs in the future. But I think overall they came out pretty well in that deal. I just can't see the Braves having, I mean, it would have been a pretty stout package, especially if you consider the portion where they've won players for now. I mean, I'm not sure who exactly the equivalent was. I saw somebody try to say Austin Hedges was a comp for Alex Jackson. I was like, there's no way. Austin Hedges is an established major league catcher. He's very top tier on defense and framing. Can't provide any offense, but I mean, he's definitely above where Alex Jackson is right now.
Right, and I think that's the key. I also tried to come up with an equivalent package, and there really isn't one. And I think in the end, that's why they weren't able to come up with a trade. I don't think they match up. The Cleveland wanted cheap major league or near major league outfielder, which they got in Naylor. The Braves don't really have something equivalent because the only outfielders that are at the majors or near the majors that you know, that would probably suit the purpose is Ronald Acuna, who obviously is not getting traded. Adam Duvall, who probably could have been had, but he's not exactly cheap, and at least not for Cleveland's purposes. And Christian Pache, which again would probably be an overpayment. I think Josh Naylor, we don't really have somebody that's equivalent to Josh Naylor, who, you know, is a solid major league outfielder that is making, you know, near league minimum. And then, like you said, we don't really have an equivalent to Hedges. You know, both of our major league catchers are needed on the major league squad right now. And Jackson, you know, as a prospect, it doesn't really measure up. And then William Contreras or Shea Langeliers as prospects would be overpays. You know, Quantrill, we probably have equivalents for. You know, Quantrill is a former first round pick that has kind of fallen out of favor. I do think that the Indians, who have a track record of really doing well, kind of getting the most out of pitchers like him, I think could really make him something. The guy I really like in this trade for Cleveland is Arias. Very kind of toolsy shortstop. He's a true shortstop and, you know, defensively, you know, just really, really good. And the question has always been whether he would be able to hit. He's got raw power. It does sound like San Diego has done a really nice job of helping him identify pitches. And if Cleveland can continue that, you know, that may be their Francisco Lindor replacement.
Yeah, for a pitcher with just 2 years of control left, and then, of course, whatever control he has this season, that's a pretty solid haul for that. And that kind of made me think, okay, if let's say if the Rangers had traded Lance Lynn, which they did not, they probably would have gotten roughly half of this package. So you're talking probably at least three solid prospects and or players that would have had to go in a trade like that.
Right. And I think I just saw a quote from Josh Daniels, the GM of the Rangers, who said that they were looking for a package greater than what Cleveland got for Clevinger. And I just don't think it was very clearly that that package didn't exist in this market right now.
No, and especially for, I know that Lance Lynn is cheap, making less than $10 million for next season, but with only 1 year of control, there's no team that's going to give up that kind of a haul. Certainly not six players worth. I mean, I think they would have had trouble getting three players worth on that. But, and then of course, Lynn would possibly have a qualifying offer draft pick attached to him after next season. So I see what the Rangers are doing, and they did what they needed to do as far as trading off their rentals, but keeping their at least slightly longer term people. So they'll have Lance Lynn probably going into their new ballpark next season with something.
Or they could move him in the offseason if they get a package they like when, you know, hopefully some amount of normalcy is returned and they have a better idea of, you know, just what the 2021 season is going to look like as well. But yeah, I think Lance Lynn will probably be a Ranger on opening day next year.
Yeah, and the good thing about what the Padres did from their end is they didn't even touch their top handful of prospects. The three guys they traded off were kind of fell in about the just inside and just outside the top 10. So they didn't have to really do a whole lot of damage to their farm system. And I think it's still, even after all this and the handful of trades they've made over the last couple of days for the likes of Austin Nola and Trevor Rosenthal, that they didn't even, they still have a top five farm system even after all that.
Sure. I mean, they were just absolutely loaded going into this. They may have fallen a little bit, but they're still probably one or two even after all this. And, you know, so good on for San Diego. I think Cleveland did a good job with this. And I think this was just simply, you know, this is what we talk about or what people talk about when we say that teams don't match up, that just the strengths that the Braves have to trade just don't match up with the desires of the team that you're going to, unless you're willing to overpay. And I think it's pretty clear Alex Anthopoulos is not going to overpay pretty much ever.
No, and that's been proven considerably over the years. I think even the Shane Green for Joey Wentz trade last year, Joey Wentz and Travis DeMeritt, that might have been a slight overpay on his part, but even that wasn't a tremendous overpay. And like I said, he's not going to go that route. And with the reticence of anybody wanting to take on any kind of money this year at all, and you've seen some of these trades, there were some money changing hands. I believe the Mike Minor trade from Texas to Oakland, that there was some money that changed hands just to try to cover his salary for the rest of the season. But the Tommy Malone trade from the Orioles, Malone's only due to make about $150,000 for the rest of the season. So imagine Anthopoulos is okay with taking that kind of money on, but probably not much more beyond that.
Yeah, that's a rounding error.
Yeah.
Yeah, so and let's just face it, I think there's a reason that Clevinger was the only pitcher with control left that was traded, and that's Cleveland was done with him. I posted a question on Twitter last night about, you know, are we sure we want this guy? He's a guy that, and I've never heard of this before, where, you know, a guy that talented that the clubhouse basically said, we don't want you around anymore. And it's, you know, it was beyond just that he broke protocols along with, you know, Zach Plesac, who's a young pitcher that's still with the organization. You know, it's that he apparently lied about it or you know, that breaks a trust in a clubhouse. You know, maybe he's going to get a fresh start. And maybe things would have been great if he had gotten traded for Atlanta, but that's another big question mark. And, oh boy, people did not like me pointing that out last night. It was pretty funny, actually.
Yeah, I think they just got a head start on trading him anyway. I think there was a pretty good chance, regardless of what all happened this season, that Clevinger would have been traded in the offseason anyway. Going to his next year of arbitration, his paycheck would have been going up considerably, and Cleveland is trying to cut back on those salaries, not increase them. And they've got a pretty solid starting pitching staff as it is. So I think he would have been gone anyway. But they, like I said, just get a month head start, get a little bit bigger haul than they would have in the offseason, and just keep on rolling to help out the team for this year to try to make the playoffs and beyond in the American League.
Yep. All right. Well, we've talked about Cleveland and San Diego enough now. Let's talk about the Atlanta Braves a little bit. Matt, we did have a top prospect move on up this week.
Well, we're moving on up, moving on up to the east side, to a deluxe apartment in the sky. Moving on up, moving on up to the east side.
And, of course, we're talking about Ian Anderson, who made his major league debut. Feels like an eon ago. It was last Wednesday. We had talked last week about the probability of him coming up soon. And of course, very quickly after that, he was announced and made his start against the Yankees and just basically blew everybody away. Just a tremendous first start for Ian Anderson. What did you see out of him that maybe surprised you or that you weren't expecting?
I like the way that he attacked the hitters, unlike some of the other prospects that had been up in recent memory, that he went after the hitters and he didn't even have his best stuff that day. He was fighting a couple of his pitches, but he made the most of what he had, got a lot of help behind the plate, and managed to, unfortunately, it wasn't a 9-inning game. It was only a 7-inning game. And I think that might've helped his mindset as well, that he went in knowing that he didn't have to go deep into a ball game. Even if he had gone just 5 innings, I'm sure they would have been thrilled with that. But the fact that he went 6 innings and only left it where the bullpen only had to carry an inning of that game was a tremendous help. But it couldn't have gone any better. I mean, he gave up the home run to Luke Voit, but that was the only blemish. And
yeah, I was very impressed with his use of this changeup. He used it a lot more than I was anticipated, and it seemed to really confound the Yankees hitters. Really good deception with it. He's got that great over-the-top motion, and he was tunneling well. Didn't use the curveball very much and wasn't particularly effective with it when he used it, but it was, he used it enough to basically force the Yankees to at least think about it. But really just the four-seamer and the changeup seemed to do the trick.
Yeah, and I'm going to look forward to his next start on Tuesday evening against the Red Sox in Boston. He's mentioned that I believe he grew up a Red Sox fan, even though he grew up in New York. So it's going to be interesting to see how he does against his the team he loved as a child. But I think that's going to be a real test for him. And I know everybody's almost counting him as the number two starter already, but I mean, he's going to have hiccups like some of a lot of these other starters have had in the prospects. But if he comes out and just even has a solid start, doesn't necessarily have to be one run in six innings. I mean, if he goes five innings, gives up two or three runs, I mean, I'm sure the Braves would be more than happy to take something like that at this point.
I'm going to make a prediction. He's going to have an outing twice as bad as his previous one. I think he's going to give up two hits in six innings.
Living on the edge there with that prediction.
Yeah. Sorry to be so pessimistic, guys.
But it's okay, even after this trade deadline, to say, oh, okay, Max Fried's pitching tonight. Oh, Ian Anderson's pitching tomorrow night. And we'll see what happens after that.
Yeah, it's going to be interesting to see what comes up. I got to think we keep saying this, of course, and we never know, you know, what's going on underneath the surface. But I got to think that they're going to have to, you know, take the wraps off of some of these young guys that haven't had their opportunity yet. And I'm thinking specifically Tucker Davidson and Patrick Weigel and maybe even Jaceel De La Cruz. But, you know, there's still other opportunities. You know, I know Alex Anthopoulos was talking up Mike Foltynewicz today, saying that he has regained some of his lost weight and that his fastball was back up into the 94 mile per hour range. So I've kind of mentally written off Mike Foltynewicz, but let's face it, I mean, if he can come back and be even somewhat effective, it's a better option than Robbie Erlin or Josh Tomlin or you know, bullpen day.
Yeah, they basically should be open auditions at this point for the third starter spot in the playoffs. Because, I mean, you got Fried and Anderson, but the first series is best two out of three. So you need somebody to pitch that third game. And I'm not really thrilled with the prospect of Robbie Erlin going right now. But between Folty, Cole Hamels, we'll see what happens with that. I mean, I don't know if you can really count on anything there. But if we hear that Kyle Wright and Bryce Wilson are throwing better down at the alternate training site, if even one of those can work out and be a halfway solid contributor in the month of September, they will get a fairly solid shot at that third spot in the first round.
Yeah, and Anthopoulos said today that both Wright and Wilson had working on making some adjustments. I think Bryce Wilson is a dark horse here. I've always liked Bryce Wilson probably a lot more than most people, but you know, because he can command the fastball, kind of like Anderson, you know, when Anderson was going well. You know, but Wilson has just not been able to do it at the major league level. If he can do that at the major league level, I think he can be every bit as successful.
Yeah, and the first test for one of these guys may come on Friday. The Braves play a doubleheader against the Washington Nationals. I believe Tommy Malone will get one of the game starts since he'll be on normal rest, but there's nobody that's going to be rested for game two. So either they're going to have to bring somebody up or they'll have to turn that into a bullpen game.
Yeah, and I can't see them turning half of a doubleheader into a bullpen game. I mean, that's a recipe for disaster.
Especially if Malone only goes two and a third again, and if the bullpen has to eat up four innings early on. But being that the Braves can add a extra player, I can see them bringing someone up, whether it's Wright, Wilson, whoever, Tukey, from the alternate training site for one game.
Well, Matt, We got a little bit of news here regarding just around the 2021 draft. This just dropped actually today in the middle of all the trade talk. Some details coming out about what the 2021 draft is going to look like.
Going to be July 11th through the 13th next year, which is about just over a month later than previous drafts, because usually it's the first week of June, but now we're looking at the second week of July in Atlanta, which I believe coincides with the Major League All-Star Game. So it'll be kind of a part of All-Star Week, I believe. And it's supposed to be between 20 to 30 rounds, that it won't be another five-round extravaganza like they had this season, that apparently is part of the March negotiations between the Players Union and MLB, that they agreed that it would be at least 20 rounds this coming season. So it'll be at least somewhat more of a normalized draft in 2021.
Right. And I'm going to guess it's going to be right at 20, because I think it's clear that Major League Baseball is already anticipating the loss of the clearing out of the short season leagues. So just the fact that they're holding the draft later, the reason that the draft had been being held in June was because the short season leagues had to start by the last week of June. So assuming that they're not around, they don't have to, staff rosters for that, they're able to push back the timing on the draft itself. And this is a move that has long been wanted by college baseball. They did not like the draft being held basically right in the middle of college playoffs, trying to do the College World Series with at least some of your roster already thinking about moving on to the pros because they just got drafted.
Like I said, I mean, they're not going to be staffing the short season team. So I'm guessing what would happen is they'd draft the players and then they'd go on to some kind of like orientation, instructional league, something along those lines in the fall. But again, those college players a break right after their season ends, so they don't have to go straight to a short season team in middle of nowhere that they're not familiar with. So it gives them a little time to get acclimated before starting full season ball the following
year. Yeah, I mean, there'll still be the complex leagues too. They could go and get some work in there as well. I wouldn't be surprised if they announced that the complex league rosters will be expanded from 35 to like 40 or something like that, just to accommodate some of that kind of things, where you maybe want to get guys down there working out and maybe into a few games, but maybe not necessarily like an everyday thing. We've seen the Braves kind of do this with some of their top prospects, especially from college, where they've gotten in a lot of work and they want to get them into games, but maybe not, go full throttle. Kyle Wright is an example of that. When we drafted him, I think they pitched him like maybe once a week for a couple innings there for a little while to kind of get him, so a break, a breather after pitching deep into the playoffs with Vanderbilt.
Yeah, so structurally, it's going to be a lot different than it's going to be than it has been in the past. And from all accounts, a lot of people are going to like this. Like I said, colleges are going to like it. Obviously, towns losing short season ball don't like it, but it's going to work out pretty well as far as just kind of slowly acclimating in rather than just throwing a bunch of prospects right into it.
All right, so the last item I have to talk about is the latest news in the professional baseball agreement negotiations. That's the major and minor league negotiations. The agreement actually expires at the end of September, so we are rapidly coming up to it. It's probably going to expire. Hopefully they'll come up with an agreement sometime around the winter meetings. But this has been a significant moment in negotiations. Last week on Thursday, on the 27th, the two sides actually met for the first official meeting since April 22nd. Obviously, things have been very busy in between these two meetings, of which not a lot of it had to do with the actual negotiations at all. Obviously, the COVID emergency and the response took up a lot of everybody's time. So, and then, of course, we had previously discussed on other episodes the kind of drama around the minor league baseball negotiating team and who was going to make that up and who was going to control it, whether it was the minor league office or the owners. And that seemed to have gotten resolved, at least for now. So they actually were able to meet. And the big news out of it was that Major League made a formal proposal to the minor league side, of which now the owners are going to chew over this for a while. A lot of it had or stuff that had been previously leaked and that we've discussed already. Matt, did anything come out of it that surprised you at all?
Not really. I mean, there's a lot of interesting things that happened, but the fact that MLB basically wants to take everything over, that's not surprising at all. And we've seen kind of jockeying from the MILB office and Pat O'Connor trying to basically keep some kind of spot in this going forward. Is like they're basically getting pushed off to the side and cutting out the middle, man. The only representation they may likely have going forward, I believe there's going to be some kind of advisory board that can recommend changes and other things like that. But it's not going to be a binding board where, I mean, that's all they can do is make recommendations. They can't order anybody to do anything. So that might be a way to kind of locate some of the minor league board, whether it's some of the owners or Pat O'Connor himself, to just try to get them going away. But it's obvious that MILB has absolutely no leverage here whatsoever. And MLB is basically, they're trying to nicely dictate what's going to be happening going forward.
Right. I don't see a way for minor league baseball to kind of negotiate off of this. I mean, there are a few things that they could probably do around the edges. But they did address some of the things that minor league owners were concerned about, and that is mostly around maintain the value of their franchises. The current affiliate agreements generally run no longer than 4 years. Major League Baseball basically is suggesting going to a franchise agreement in which the franchise agreement could go up to 10 years. And then if for some reason, you know, a Major League team doesn't return to that they would, that owner would get a guaranteed buyout. So we'll see how that goes. I imagine that's a lot of negotiation is going to be around that. And I think there's some interesting things here about now, right now, minor league, like Major League Baseballs cannot be a minority owner in a minor league club. They either have no ownership rights at all, or they own it completely outright, as the Braves do with most of their affiliates. They completely own outright Danville, Rome, Gwinnett, and Mississippi. So being a minority owner, you know, is an injection of some capital into the clubs. Major League would be able to pay directly for facility upgrades. And that's been a real bone of contention between major and minor league for a while now. The major leagues want the minor leagues to upgrade their facilities, but, you know, putting in a new weight room or a new video room isn't going to generate revenue for a minor league club. So they don't want to spend money to do that. And the major leagues aren't allowed by agreement to spend money to do that. This would take away that, quite frankly, a huge thing, I think.
I think that's something that could really improve things going forward. One part I found interesting is that right now the MILB teams are charged an 8.5% ticket tax. There's an 8.5% ticket tax right now. 8% goes to MLB and the 0.5 goes to the minor league clubs. What MLB is wanting to do is the entire 8.5% going to them in the future. And that would be the extent of the money that would have to be paid to MLB. But in return, what MLB wants is to get everything, all the ancillary income, the sponsorships, broadcasting, licensing, digital rights, merchandise, and basically do a 50-50 split with the minor league teams. where MLB gets 50% of it and the minor league teams get 50% of it. I thought that was kind of interesting that obviously the minor league teams would be making less per unit. Let's say if I'm baking cakes in my house and selling them, I'm not making much. I mean, I'm making a lot per cake, but I'm not selling a whole lot of cakes. But let's say if Walmart wanted to pick up my cakes and start selling them and say if they want to do a 50-50 split, I'm not making as much money per cake, but I'm selling a whole lot more cakes because Walmart's carrying them. Now, if MLB decides to put that kind of marketing behind the minor league teams and, let's say, carry their merchandise in their shops or online, give market a good bit, the teams are going to make a lot more money than they were making before.
Right, or even putting digital rights to the minor league games out on, say, the MLB streaming service, or, you know, showing more minor league games on MLB networks. You know, that's a potentially a lot of money going to minor league teams that's just not there right now. It's pretty interesting. It would certainly that I think I saw somewhere where the current merchandising, the national merchandising sponsorship licensing, that comes to about $70 million. So that would be $35 million going to major league teams right now, Major League Baseball, that isn't there right now. That's, you know, $35 million, that's not a whole lot compared to, you know, say national major league broadcasting merchandising and licensing, but it's not nothing either.
No. And another part of that too, it's like, let's say the sponsorships. I mean, you see, anytime you go to a minor league ball game, you see all the advertisements along the fence and around the ballpark. If MLB puts their muscle behind it and say, like, it's Coca-Cola, Home Depot, other companies like that to do deals, where they say, hey, we can get you into X number of ballparks for this amount of money, that's more money coming in from both sides. So I can see some advantages there, because I'm sure that major multinational corporations are going to pay more than Joe's Pest Control.
Hey, Joe's got bank, man.
Don't mess with Joe.
All right. Yeah. So that's interesting. And one thing I should point out, Garrett Brocious, who is an attorney for Advocates for Minor Leaguers, which is a group that's basically trying to start a union for minor league players, correctly pointed out that in the licensing agreement that MLB proposes in this 50-50 split, still players would not be compensated at all for the use of their likenesses, which does seem pretty crappy. So unfortunately, minor league players have absolutely no say in this.
No, because there is no representation. They don't have a union, and MLBPA is not going to be fighting for them. And another thing that I found kind of towards the end of that article was for teams that are going to get left out in the cold, that they're looking for buyouts to say, hey, if you're not going to be helping us out anymore and we're not going to be part of you, they can throw us a check and we'll go away. Apparently, MLB is not wanting to do any of that at all, because the way they see it is their part of it ends at the end of the season, because the professional baseball agreement says all they have to do is supply players to these teams. They're saying, hey, the teams are still going to exist, we just won't be sending you players, which technically kills the team. I mean, technically the team still exists, but there's just no players that can be playing on those teams. So I'm sure that's probably going to be part of some kind of negotiating room before all this is final.
It's a really underhanded kind of stance to take, I think. I mean, it's true by the letter of the agreement, but it's Major League Baseball that's going to kill these teams. And I know it's hard to gin up sympathy, a lot of sympathy for minor league owners. They've had a pretty good shake of it for a while, but all these leagues that are just evaporating, it's still a bitter pill to swallow, even though it's almost a certainty at this point.
Yeah, I agree on that. There'll be more to come. I'm sure there's a couple more rounds of negotiations, but I think we're starting to kind of see the bones on the negotiation, and they'll still have to build out the house a little bit, but we kind of could see what the frame of the house looks like at this point.
All right, Matt. Well, it is just a few minutes before Max Fried is going to toe the rubber against the Boston Red Sox. So I think we'll go ahead and wrap it up here. Thanks for tuning in, everybody. You can discuss this or anything else baseball related with us on Twitter. I am at K26DP. That's strike them out, throw them out. Or you can contact us at OFR Sports. And Matt, you are at Braves Matt MC, correct?
At Braves Matt C.
Or you can find us on Facebook at Outfield Fly Rule. And of course, visit our page, our blog, outfieldflyrule.com. Had some great content come up this week. I did an evaluation of the Braves first half back on Friday. And then we had a guest writer, Austin Reach, who is at Braves_stats on Twitter, did a really nice trade deadline options, of which, of course, none came to pass. But hey, Austin, it was a great read anyway. And then Matt, you did a really nice breakdown of the Tommy Malone trade, which was really hard to do considering we have no idea who is going to Baltimore as of this moment in that trade.
Every other trade seems to be that we have at least an idea who's going. In this particular case, that's the one thing Alex Anthopoulos has managed to keep secret, is who is going to Baltimore to fill that end of the trade.
I would like to think that it's a list of players, and the quality of players depends on Tommy Malone's performance.
Well, if that's the case, you make a really rude comment here, but we'll choose not to do so. Maybe the quality of the players may not be quite as good if he continues to perform like this.
Well, let's hope he performs and Baltimore ends up with a couple pretty good players. All right. Thanks, everybody. Hope you have a great week.
Have a good one.